An anti-corruption campaign in Ukraine has been a treasure hunt for the government. Public officials forced to report their wealth and property have revealed this week millions of dollars in cash stashes, expensive jewelry and watches, fleets of luxury cars, disclosed in a country where the average salary is about $200 a month. Since the ousting of President Viktor Yanukovych and the eventual election of President Petro Poroshenko, following the Maidan Revolution, there has been a bitter war in the East with Russian sympathizers. Can day-to-day life return to Ukraine in the middle of this frustrating military stalemate? Just how much of a cash grab is civic life today in this once Soviet-dominated republic? Author Sophie Pinkham wanted to know, and having spent time in Ukraine, Irkutsk, and Moscow, she eventually landed in Kiev and has a new book out today, Black Square, Adventures in Post-Soviet Ukraine. Pinkham shows us that there is normal life in Ukraine, and there are wonderful, colorful characters as well who live below the radar with the occasional pop-up to confront the authorities. Pinkham admires the extent to which Ukrainians are involved in change, as well as their ability to just get on with their own lives.
It was just riveting to see how literally every single person I knew from the time that I had lived in Kiev was just rushing to the square. A lot of them had quit their jobs, or they would just stay up every single night for months almost, fighting with soldiers or with special police, making borscht for the protesters in these huge cauldrons. A lot of the people, since I worked in healthcare, a lot of the people that I knew started doing emergency health services. So, for example, at one office where I had often been during the time that I worked in Ukraine, they made it into a sort of makeshift hospital and were, removing bullets from protesters' necks just lying on conference tables in their administrative offices. And everyone I talked to spoke about this sort of feeling of historical inevitability. One of my close friends said that it seemed scary from the outside, but that once you went to Maidan, it was no longer scary because you were at sort of the still center of the hurricane.
How did you find Putin and the charges that the Ukrainians were Nazis, that the movement was all about Nazism, and that we're the winners of the Second World War? In Moscow, you were there at the moment of the 70th anniversary.
So Putin's accusation that Maidan Revolution was a fascist coup, that all Ukrainian Nazis, it was just extremely clear-cut propaganda. Being with the people who were demonstrating, if you had even really a superficial knowledge of the types of people who were demonstrating, was clearly not true. There are people of many different political persuasions, and a lot are just sort of, European-leaning liberals. Although at the same time, and this was something that's made the ensuing years very complicated, there were a certain number of essentially fascist and sometimes even neo-Nazi far-right protesters on Maidan. And they were a very small proportion of the protesters, but radical nationalists, neo-Nazis and so on, because of their eagerness, not only willingness, but eagerness to use violence, tend to be sort of in the vanguard and tend to have a disproportionately large effect on the outcome of events. And since then, because the war effort with the Russian-backed separatists in the East came at a time when the Ukrainian army was essentially non-functional, it was taken up by these volunteer militias. And unfortunately, a lot of the people who were the first to join those volunteer militias and who formed the volunteer militias were extremely far right, and who now are heavily armed.
Well, the weapons, the symbolism of Nazism, Stalinism, the Cold War, all of this mixes in this strange brew that you experience in Russia. Is there a nostalgia for Stalin, a nostalgia for old Russia, a nostalgia for all that utopian talk of the old days of communism?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that right now in Russia, especially nostalgia for the communist past and for the imperial past is one of the most sort of potent political forces. And there is this feeling that that Russia was emasculated by the end of the Soviet Union, that, Russia was once the Great Bear, Russia was a superpower, and now what is it? It's just an ordinary country, it's just a poor country. And where are the times when, when we, the Russian people, were remaking the whole world? Where are our great ambitions? And sort of, the model of sort of liberal democracy, for all of its many merits, is definitely short on grandiose aspirations and, you know, huge plans that will change the course of history forever and remake humanity. And those have been such a potent stream in Russian culture for so long, for hundreds of years, that I think it's been hard for people to say goodbye to them. But it certainly was very disconcerting on the 70th anniversary of Victory Day in Russia to see large numbers of people, you know, wearing Stalin t-shirts and waving Stalin banners. And, you know, there are these regular debates about putting Stalin statues back up. There's still a strong urge for a great leader.
Did you actually see Zhukov's portrait in Moscow, the portrait of the hero of World War II, the great general?
Mm-hmm. I did. And it's very interesting to see how sort of the symbols and the icons of the Soviet period have been resurrected in these new sort of meme-worthy, very 21st century incarnations, you know? So you make this sort of hipster-looking graffiti on the walls of fashionable streets in Moscow, but it's referring to the Second World War. And this idea of the repurposing of old iconography was very fascinating in Ukraine as well, because, you know, one of the reasons that Russia was able to so easily promote the idea that the Ukrainian Revolution was a Nazi revolution, which it wasn't on the whole, was that the revolution started using certain heroes from the Ukrainian nationalist past in their slogans and started using Ukrainian nationalist chants like glory to Ukraine, glory to heroes, and more menacingly, glory to Ukraine, death to enemies in their chants. And a lot of people argued, no, these have a new meaning, these have a new valence now, and symbols can take on new meanings. And it's, you know, it's true, but can you really detach them from their old meanings? You know, probably not.
Do you think Ukraine will heal from this war? What do people think?
It's really hard to say. I think really no one knows at this point. It's extremely expensive for Russia to continue occupying Crimea and for it to continue backing the war in eastern Ukraine. And it seems unlikely, especially given, you know, that they are in somewhat limited financial situation, that they will want to keep going this way forever. It seems quite likely that it'll end up a sort of permanent frozen conflict zone, which would be terrible for the inhabitants because it's sort of this not completely stateless, but almost stateless way of existence. And that's very difficult, but I hope that things will improve. It would be important, though, for the Ukrainian government to sort of take measures to show that they want the people in Crimea and in eastern Ukraine to be citizens of Ukraine, because there has been a lot of very angry, quite hateful rhetoric often, even coming from Ukrainian government officials towards people in those areas. That's very alienating to them and very upsetting, and is, you know, tends to drive them into the arms of Russia.
Sophie, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Sophie Pinkham is the author of Black Square, Adventures in Post-Soviet Ukraine, on sale today.